May it please the court, counsel. Michael Hoffman, attorney registration number 30207, on behalf of IBM Corporation. Your Honors, the city's code does not authorize the city to issue an estimated assessment against a taxpayer such as IBM who filed tax returns for every tax year and paid the amount shown to be due. For that reason, the city had no authority to issue the estimated assessment, and the trial court had no authority to uphold it. The code's plain language provides two categories of taxpayers who may be...
Mr. Hoffman?
Yes.
I want to make sure you preserve this issue for review. I saw that it was mentioned in a trial brief. I saw no mention of it thereafter. No request for a ruling.
It was argued in the trial brief, offered to the district court as an issue to decide, and you're correct, the district court did not expressly discuss it, but the court...
Did you ask the court to rule on it at trial?
Not at trial, Your Honor, but it was raised in the trial brief.
And you think that's enough to preserve the issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under what authority?
It's a purely legal issue raised in the trial brief. Under this court's precedence, legal issues presented in the trial court are preserved for appeal. Here, we simply had no ruling.
No ruling on it.
But it's a legal issue. That just means our review is de novo if it's preserved.
Correct.
But it doesn't relieve you of the obligation of requesting a ruling on the issue.
Well, Your Honor, it was raised in the trial brief as an issue for the court to decide. Evidence was presented on it. Witnesses were asked about it. It was there was no any evidence that needed to be presented other than the stipulation in the trial management order, which was that IBM filed returns and paid the amount of tax due. For that reason, IBM contended both before trial and during the trial that an estimate assessment of the circumstance was not authorized. The trial court's failure to expressly discuss the issue, going right by it, doesn't deprive IBM of its right to a de novo review by this court of that issue. It's not as if the trial court misled and did not understand this was an issue in the case. So I don't believe the trial court's neglect of the issue justifies a finding of waiver by IBM.
Well, did you raise it in the post-trial motion?
We didn't
say, Judge, you didn't rule on this issue.
No, we did not. We got the court's order. In our view, it contained an implicit ruling against us on the issue. So we did not...
Implicit ruling on a question of statutory interpretation. That's what you're hanging your head on.
Absolutely. The trial court could not have reached the result it did without implicitly concluding against IBM. I don't believe there's any requirement that IBM go back to the trial court and say, we formally request an explicit ruling on an issue that is a legal issue that's raised in the trial brief and on which there's a stipulated fact sufficient to determine the issue. So we do believe that we preserved it, and presuming it is preserved, the district court decided it incorrectly. The city's code provides that estimates can be issued against taxpayers who fall into two categories. One, taxpayer does not file a return. Two, a taxpayer that doesn't pay any tax, who pays no tax. IBM does not fall into either category.
Mr. Hoffman, you cut that sentence off, any tax. That's not where the sentence ends.
As required by this section.
Exactly.
I read that as a limitation on the finance director's power. In other words,
it doesn't say as shown in the return. It says as required by this section.
Sure.
So any tax required by this section, if you fail to pay that, you can be assessed. It doesn't matter what you show on your return.
Sure. If you pay no tax required by that section, you may be assessed. But two points. One, the grammar is still the same. Fail to pay any as a matter of grammar means pay none. Secondly, I wouldn't read as required by this section as an expansion of the finance director's power. I believe it's a limitation because it prevents the finance director from saying, well, I've gotten word that this taxpayer didn't pay property tax, didn't pay federal income tax, so I'm going to estimate now. It links the estimating power back to the specific section at issue. But the grammar of the code remains the same. It is the word any preceded by a negative.
But you're relying on certain dictionary definitions. There are other dictionary definitions of this term that contravene your proposed meaning. We have to look at the context.
Absolutely. And I do not believe there is another dictionary definition that contravenes my proposed meaning for this reason. The structure of the sentence is any preceded by a negative. There's only one dictionary that discusses that issue, the Oxford English Dictionary. It makes very clear that when any is preceded by a negative, it means none. For example, the case the city filed on Friday, one of their cases is the Lopez case. Here's the language in Lopez. This policy won't provide any insurance when the motor vehicle is being driven by Tom Valdez. This court said the plain meaning of this phrase, won't provide any, is that no insurance of any kind will be available if Tom Valdez is driving.
Sure, but the court there looked at the entire context of the use of the word. He didn't look at the word in a vacuum. Sure. Like you're asking us to look at it in a vacuum and to incorporate shown in a return into Clause A when that's in Clause B.
Actually, no. Remember the 2 points. The duty to file a return is separate and distinct from the duty to pay the tax. So if you don't pay any tax, if you pay no tax,
required by this section.
Required by the section. Then you are subject to an estimate. And secondly, I am not reading the phrase out of context. I'm actually putting it in context. Here's the context. First, this provides clear notice to the taxpayer and a clear demarcation of the finance director's authority. He can't just issue an estimate if he has a suspicion or a hunch that the taxpayer may have underpaid. You know from the outset whether, as a taxpayer, you're in the category of folks who may be estimated. Under the city's reading, you don't know, and you may not know until the end of the case, whether the finance director actually had this power. Secondly, there is a specific provision in the city's code, 3.06020, that tells the finance director what to do if he thinks the return may have been incorrect.
Doesn't say that it's the only thing the director can do.
It's true. It gives him an option.
Right.
He doesn't have to take it.
Right.
But it does. Nothing in the code says, and of course, the remedy there is to conduct an audit. Nothing in the code says if you suspect the return is incorrect, don't worry about doing an audit. You can go immediately to an enforcement mechanism. That's not the structure of the code.
Nothing in the code says they can't. I mean, you're trying to argue that because there is another option, that the first option is precluded. No, but there's no exclusivity language in the second option.
The first one is not an option. The code says if the finance director thinks the return may be incorrect, he may do an audit. It doesn't say if he thinks the return may be incorrect, he may issue an estimate. Now, that's what happened here, but that's not an option provided by the code. And to your point about the amount showing the return, that's expressly covered by subsection B of 3.08, where it says, if you pay less than the amount showing the return, the taxpayer is exposed to a deficiency notice for the difference. But that's it. The city's reading creates a situation where a taxpayer like IBM, who files a return and pays everything shown due, can be estimated in any amount, in this case, in an amount that depends upon a colossal misunderstanding of Schedule P.
Well,
whereas, sorry.
I guess my response to that would be, so what?
Well, reading the code as a whole, giving a sensible, harmonious, and consistent interpretation to it, as this court says you have to, it doesn't make sense to say a fully compliant taxpayer like IBM may be estimated, but someone who admittedly pays less than owed can't be. That it doesn't make sense. A more compliant taxpayer would have less protection.
How are you fully compliant if you don't pay what you owe under the code, as the section says? You're not fully compliant. You're partially compliant.
The audit would be to determine whether or not the taxpayer actually has paid. Remember, there's no claim here of fraud by IBM. This is a case of a good faith taxpayer filing returns, paying the amount the taxpayer believes is due. If there is a basis to think it's wrong, the code's remedy is an audit, which was never done here. The city went directly to an estimate because of its ire over IBM's failure to produce the fixed asset list.
Now, wait a minute. The city made a request for 14 different categories of information from your client. That's an audit. Your client did not provide the information. The court found that, and there's record support for that.
I disagree. I think two different things are being confused here. The city asked IBM for information about Excel. The subpoena that was actually issued to IBM, which is Joint Exhibit 2, page 10, asked for 5 categories of information. And then this is all in Joint Exhibit 2. There's an exchange where the city says, what we really want is the fixed asset list. Please give us a fixed asset list. It was IBM's failure to produce one in the form the city wants that led directly to the estimate to get IBM's attention. So to the extent audit was begun, it was ended quickly. They never pursued their remedies.
Well, it was ended after several months and several requests for information that were not complied with.
Well, IBM had no chance of producing that fixed asset list. It hasn't done it to this day.
It wasn't just the fixed asset list. There was all kinds of information IBM failed to provide.
At the time the estimate was issued, and I think the record's clear on this, the city's complaint was the failure to produce the fixed asset list only. That was the reason. Remember, the fixed asset list comes in on a Friday. City gets upset. They want to get IBM's attention. Monday's a holiday. Tuesday, $2.5 million estimate, 2.4 rounded up to 2.5 goes out. because of the fixed asset list, which IBM had no chance to produce. And the reason why IBM had no chance to produce the fixed asset list is because it was asking for sales and tax information by building, which is not how it's tracked by IBM. It was asking for depreciation, which IBM sales and use tax department doesn't keep. It was asking for depreciation of someone else's property, which IBM doesn't keep. It was asking for not just assets there currently, but assets that had ever been at the data center at any time, back to 1995. And it was using a phrase, fixed asset list, which IBM's sales and use tax department understood differently from how the city did. The trial court got confused on this point because the trial court said, inventory, fixed asset list, it's all the same. They're quite different. Fixed assets are capital assets, non-current assets. A baker's oven, for example, is a fixed asset. His flour is his inventory. So IBM had no chance of producing a depreciation schedule for anyone else's property, regardless of whether the asset was still there, even if the asset had been there in the past. That's why the city went, so because of their ire about the fixed asset list, the city went directly to Schedule P. It's clear from the record the trial court and the city at the time it issued the estimate completely misunderstood Schedule P. It is clear beyond dispute in the record, and the city doesn't try to dispute it, that was not a projection of sales to Excel.
Wasn't Schedule P modified by the city's finance director before it was introduced to trial?
It was. A title was added, which we believe misled the court.
Well, I understand there were some other modifications, though. It wasn't just a title change, was it?
Oh, I'm sorry. What the finance director did was it took out part of clearly non-taxable parts of Schedule P, eliminated those from the analysis and got down to $82 million. But what they did not do, and I think it's clear from the record, they did not limit it just to activity in Golden. It's activity across Xcel Energy's entire eight-state region. So standing here today, IBM has been taxed on a document, reflects someone else's costs across a nationwide area.
But the software was installed at the facility in Golden.
Actually, Ms. Milks testified, if you run tax ID 22, only about $300,000 worth of software was installed there, and the tax order on that is $18,000. What the trial court said is, well, software is used everywhere, so I'm going to assume it was all sold in Golden, and it was all used first in Golden.
Actually, the witness testified that it was installed other places, but that was also installed in Golden.
Well, used in Golden. Now,
no, installed in Golden.
Installed in Golden. Where I think the error there is the assumption that all the software was sold first and installed first and used first in Golden. There's no record basis for that assumption. Ms. Milk's testimony to the contrary, which is not stricken, rebuts that. I reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Merrigan. With me at council table, I have my partner, Heidi Potter, and my associate, Mike Arnold. We're with Berg Hill, Greenleaf, and Rashidi. We have the privilege of representing the city of Golden in this matter. Taking up on the discussion, a couple of things. First of all, with regard to the use of the word any, the city's position is simple and straightforward. Any is one of the most commonly used words in the English language. Its meaning in a particular usage depends on the context in which it was used. In the context of a taxpayer's neglect or refusal to pay any tax, it means that the taxpayer has failed to pay all of the taxes it owes to the taxing authority. Different interpretations lead to absurd results. Yes, sir.
What about this? It's in the briefs as well that the city essentially used this assessment procedure because it was upset with the way that IBM was responding to the audit, and it was to get their attention.
I don't know if the city was upset, but the city, I think the timing of the issuance of the assessment was in fact in response to the receipt of a long-promised and little-delivered fixed asset list, the list that was useless to the city because it had no useful information about the costs and the, all of the things you need to compute tax. That caused, that was responsible for the timing. The city issued the assessment, however, because for the same reason the city initiated the audit of IBM, because the city reasonably believed that there was a large amount of taxes owed to the city by IBM as a result of the equipment and software located at the data center in Golden.
But what was it that led the city to believe that, so that it wasn't just a hunch?
The city knows how much tax it received, and when it became aware through its audit of Excel as of the extent of the equipment located at this data center, it reasonably believed that there, I mean, the record shows $203,000 paid to the city in the, during the audit period for sales and use tax, and most of that was associated with little offices, insurance, banks, things like that in Golden. Had nothing to do with the data center. There's an exhibit, Exhibit A31, where an IBM employee, in response to a question from Mr. Levy's office, asked, Mr. Levy's office said, could you please tell us, you know, which equipment at the data center, they were going to have a tour, Levy's office was, of the data center, and they had some questions, and they said, will you be able to tell us, when we're there, who owns what, whether it's Excel owned or IBM owned? And this gentleman, who was a project manager responsible for the this project, writes back and says, no, we can't. We can show you how they're identified, but there's over 700 servers at the data center. And also in Exhibit A31, they asked about the software. Could you tell us which programs are installed out there? And he says, no, we can't, but we support over 1,000 software applications out of that location. So there was evidence in the record that was an admitted exhibit that from which the court could reasonably conclude that there was, in fact, over 700 servers and over 1,000 software programs installed in Golden. And frankly, even though that was a few years later, this, I mean, that's why the city needed the information about the fixed asset list. The testimony was clear, both from the city's witnesses and from Mr. DeLisa, the city's retained expert, that in fact, you can't do an audit of a sales and use tax liability in a situation like this without a fixed asset list. And IBM had the burden of proof throughout this case and failed to produce it. Now, and one of the things that I thought was interesting in counsel's response to your question was he kept referring to the IBM tax department. They don't have this information, the tax department. And indeed, the city initially tried to talk to people at the project level. They wanted to talk to the people who worked at the data center, who knew what went on there. And eventually IBM said, no, you have to deal with our tax department in Connecticut. And so the city acquiesced in that request. And typically, it was true in the trial, and it was true throughout the attempt to audit, that it was clear that the tax department didn't know things that the project people did. That's why the Exhibit A31, I think, is important, because it comes from a project person. And they say 700 plus servers and 1,000 plus software applications. The tax department didn't know, didn't want to know, I don't know. But they, it's tricky when they say the tax department doesn't know this. That doesn't mean IBM doesn't know it. With regard to the, and I want to talk a little bit more about the burden of proof. IBM only called, as you know, two witnesses in its case in chief. One was Mr. Levy, the accountant that they hired to conduct what he termed an audit of IBM's self-assessment of their tax liability, which turned out to be completely unreliable and didn't rise to the level of any kind of proof upon which either the court or anybody else could base, could attempt to get to a better number than the original assessment based on Schedule P. The other thing about Schedule P that IBM keeps mentioning is that it's somehow invalid because The data center provides services to an 8-state region. It doesn't matter whether they provide services to an 8-state region or the whole world. It only matters what equipment is located in Golden and whether tax has been paid on. It's the hardware and software that's located at the data center was the focus of the city's inquiry throughout this matter. And the court recognized that in its findings, and the court appropriately, we believe, found that the IBM had failed to prove that they had a different tax liability than that was contained in the assessment. IBM argues in their brief that all they had to do was prove that the assessment was invalid. Well, as you know, the scope of the trial was something that the city raised by a motion for determination of question of law prior to the trial. And the city said, all right, let's just talk about the trial should only be about whether the assessment was invalid. IBM argued, no, this is a trial de novo, and IBM should be allowed to present any evidence it has as to what its actual tax liability is. And the court agreed. Judge Russell issued an order, and she said that this is going to be a trial de novo, and any relevant evidence that IBM wants to present about what its actual tax liability is, regardless of the assessment, we'll take that and we'll listen to it. And that's what happened at the trial. That's also what happened, by the way, at the Department of Revenue proceeding, which preceded this appeal, which is also statutorily required to be a trial de novo.
So is it your position that IBM is somehow a stop from asserting the argument that they only need to prove the assessment is incorrect?
No, but I don't think that they certainly didn't make that argument at the trial court. They made just the opposite argument. And I think that IBM was required to prove what their tax liability was by a preponderance of the evidence. That's what the case was about. At their request, that's what this case was about. And they did not put on any evidence which would form the basis of a reliable determination of that. Mr. Levy's audit was flawed for so many reasons I won't get into them, besides it's a factual determination. But it was not helpful. And the only other witness they called was this Mr. Post, who was their Schedule P guy. And Mr. Post is a salesman for IBM. His job was to get Excel to sign the contract. And he used Schedule P as one of his tools in getting that done. But as the court further found, Schedule P was attached to later iterations of the same ITS agreement and had never been modified. There is substantial evidence in the record supporting the trial court's findings with regard to the appropriateness of Schedule P in this case. In fact, it's somewhat interesting that the city wasn't even given Schedule P by IBM. That came from Excel. At the time that the assessment was issued, the only thing that IBM had given the city in the course of its audit was that bogus asset list.
Well, can you walk me through the analysis that you think we should go through in looking at Schedule P? As I understand it from the briefs, Schedule P was attached to a proposal sent by IBM to Excel saying, here's what you can save if you go with us.
Right. But the main thing that was in there was that it had projected costs. And that's the only thing that the
projected costs of their equipment and software?
Projected costs of the entire operation. And they said, this is what it's going to cost you if you don't use us. Okay?
Did they say this is what's going to cost you if you do use us?
Well, not that we saw. Not in that agreement.
But isn't the latter the inquiry that you have to make to determine what taxable?
If we had it available, yes. But keep in mind, this is an estimate. It's a good faith estimate. It's an invitation to the taxpayer to say, this is right, this is wrong, this is why. That's what an estimated assessment is. The city's preference was to do an actual audit. That's the road they went down initially, and they were thwarted at every turn because IBM failed to give them reliable information. And it's not just the city that uses this technique. It is the state. Their statute is exactly the same, as we point out in our brief, as the city's code. and other numerous other jurisdictions throughout the state. And if the court were to rule that that was inappropriate, that would significantly undermine the tax enforcement activities of not only the city of Golden in Colorado.
I don't think that the question was directed so much at was this the best evidence? I mean, I think that's what your argument is this is the best evidence we had, this Schedule P.
Yes.
I think the argument of the side is, well, it may be the best you have, but it wasn't good enough. That is, it doesn't provide any basis for determining the amount that was actually paid for services, software, equipment installed at the data center.
Well, it was the result of the best of a filtering process engaged in, where over $300 million of inappropriate costs were eliminated from the number. The number was close to $400 million, and then it was taken down by the city's auditor. They eliminated down to the non-labor costs, because clearly the largest component of this of the costs associated with the provision of services under this contract was in fact labor. And so it was down to what appeared to be the equipment and software costs. Now, whether those whether the equipment and software is bought by IBM or by Excel, that's not where the savings is going to be, because the equipment costs what the equipment costs. So we would argue that yes, it was a reasonable basis on which to determine the projected tax liability. But still, keep in mind, it's an estimate. It is therefore incumbent upon IBM, pursuant to the statutes and the interpretive case law, they have the burden of proof. Come in and prove what the right number is. They failed to do that.
Well, do they have to prove what the right number is, or do they just have to prove that your number is not reliable?
No, they have to prove that there's a better number, and they have to give demonstrable reasons for it. That would be our position, and they didn't. They failed to do that. They wouldn't even answer the most basic questions, which would set up a real question. And Mr. Keeley, the city's auditor, was asked, after I asked him, everything else you've seen, can you now give us a better number based on the discovery, all the numbers, the other things that we looked at? We looked at something called a chargeback database, which had over 1.1 million lines of data. And the city, IBM said, well, the tax department never uses that. Once again, the tax department. Anyway, I said, can you do that? And he said, no, I can't. The assessment is still the best number we have. And that's what the court found, and I believe that's a factual finding. Thank you.
Just a few points in rebuttal, Your Honors. On the waiver issue, Judge Jones, it was argued in closing arguments, page 939 through 942 in the trial transcript. The Schedule P was not...
That was 949
to... I'm sorry, 939 through 942 in the closing argument. The issue of the meaning of the code was expressly argued. Now, in terms of whether Schedule P was the best evidence, Schedule P was, in fact, the worst evidence. Wasn't even the best evidence available to the city at the time. There's a little bit of a shuffle going on. The city would have you believe that all the equipment and all the people who provide services under the ITS agreement are in Golden. It's not the case, and the city knew it at the time it issued the estimated assessment. Schedules C and D are also part of the ITS agreement that the city had. And in those schedules, IBM equipment is listed. It's here. Here's the equipment that IBM is going to use to perform this contract. The equipment that Xcel Energy owns and which IBM will use is in this schedule, Schedule C, along with its location. This is adjoining Exhibit 1, starting at page 223. If you look, it gives the location of this equipment. It's in Fort Collins, Evergreen, Lubbock, Amarillo. It's all over the country. So don't be confused. The entire project is not serviced from Golden. And the problem with relying on Schedule P is that it assumes that everything being done under the agreement is being done in Golden.
Well, actually, they backed it out to 60%. They determined that there was a large portion that was not, in fact, being done in Golden. They backed it out.
That's actually not correct. What they did is they thought a large part of Schedule P, for example, labor, is not taxable on its face. So they took that out. But they assumed that the entire number was a Golden-only number. They never limited it to Golden. Now, there's a limit, I think. The city said an estimate is an invitation to talk about your tax liability. It's not. 5 days later, your property can be sold to satisfy the estimate. It's a serious thing. Nothing in the city's code authorizes it to issue an estimated assessment against taxpayer like IBM and then say, IBM, unless you prove to the penny what you owe, we can estimate you in an arbitrary and unreasonable number. Because that's what happened here. We asked the court to vacate the decision below. Unless the panel has further questions.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.